I'm Josh Jackson, and thanks for listening.
People up to in town. Find out on Out There Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 5 on Valley Free Radio for live encounters from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond. We don't care if we live not a day. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna make a scene between me and you on my rocking bicycle that's built for two. And thanks for tuning in to Out There today. It's Wednesday, July 11th. I'm live in the studio today. I was traveling for some of the last few shows. Actually, every other week, if you haven't caught the other show, Energy Matters, Caroline Ruderman is doing that every other Wednesday, alternating with Out There. So to support that show too, every other Wednesday from 4 to 5. And then my show Out There is every other Wednesday from 4 to 5. Today's show. What do I have? Well, some clips that I got when I was traveling. I went to Kentucky to see my family, where I usually go. Oh, I might have a story or two about my mom. I have an interview with a guy from Greensboro, North Carolina about cockfighting. I ran into him on the bus. Oh, yeah. I talked with my parents about air conditioning. And then I'm not sure how much time there's going to be for now. I think I'm just going to start with thinking a little bit chronologically about my trip and what stories I want to share from there. It was a pretty funny trip in some ways. Like, so I usually take the bus. I go down to Kentucky. I go down to Knoxville, Tennessee, and then I make my way from there to Kentucky. But the bus, first of all, I missed my connection in New York. But then I was able to get another ticket, and then I'm like standing in line at Port Authority with like 40 other people at 9:30 at night, waiting to get on an overnight bus to Richmond. And the Greyhound person comes out and says, "I'm sorry, we don't have a bus driver. Well, we're overworked and overtired, so we'll let you know when we get one." And everyone's just kind of like, because they're kind of tired and it's late already. And then like an hour later, they come out and we start loading up onto the bus. And everyone's like, "Yes, we're on our way to Richmond." It was this express overnight bus. Express. It wasn't too express. Because the first thing that happened, we got a few blocks out of Port Authority on, I don't know, 7th Avenue or 8th Avenue, whatever it is. And all of a sudden, there was this ka-ching loud kind of like noise, like the bus had run over a pothole or I don't know what. And the driver pulls up over to a stop immediately at the stoplight. And she was like, everyone's like, "What was that?" And she says, "That car hit me." And everyone groans. "Oh, no, now we're going to have to sit and wait for the police report." And this one guy says, "Hey, can I take a smoke break?" So then we were stopped at the light for like an hour till the police report got taken care of. And then right before we left, the guy who had run into us, he sent a message back with a police officer saying he was really sorry that all those people on that bus, and I think the bus probably had like 60 people on it, 70 people on it. He was really sorry that all those people on that bus had to wait for a whole hour because he made a stupid mistake. Anyway, it just, you know, sometimes when I've made mistakes that inconvenience people, I think about that poor guy. So then then the bus starts going again. By now it's 11:30 at night, and we're all like, finally we're going to relax and go to sleep. And we go through the Lincoln Tunnel, and we make it into New Jersey just barely. And then there's blue lights flashing, and a police car pulls up. And everyone's like, "What now?" And the driver says, "The luggage compartment's open." The guy next to me is like, "Well, yeah, it's because the car just hit us right there. I hope my stuff didn't fall out." Anyway, so then we finally took care of that, and then we finally got on the road, and blah, blah, blah. Trip continues all night, next day, then the next afternoon, we're coming into, we're almost to the Tennessee line going through Virginia, and the bus, this is the new driver, new bus, we're going down the interstate, and then the bus just comes coasting to a stop on the side of the interstate, and the driver's like, I don't know, the bus just kind of died, I'm just going to pull over and then wait a few minutes and then try and restart it. And I'm like, that's going to solve it? Okay, but you know, you're the driver, whatever. And so sure enough, we wait like 5 minutes and he starts the bus up again and then we keep on going. So, but then it would go for like 3 or 4 miles and then we'd pull over again. So it took us like an hour to get to hobble into Bristol, Tennessee, the next bus stop, which it was like 20 miles. It's funny, we were going through downtown Bristol and there was a railroad track crossing. And you know how buses are supposed to come to a complete stop at railroad crossings. And so the driver hits the brakes and all the passengers are like, no, don't stop, just keep going. So he rolls on through and we go coasting into the bus station in Bristol. And so there we waited, we waited for some bus to come rescue us any minute. And that went on and on for a bunch of hours. And in this time, the people that were on the bus just were hanging out in the park, hanging out everywhere in Bristol. And so when I was hanging out with some people in the park, I got in a conversation about cockfighting. And I was particularly interested in this because of the recent bust in Florence of the cockfighting training center or whatever out on Florence Road. And so there were a couple of guys that I ended up talking with. Unfortunately, I didn't write their names down. Well, I don't guess it really matters. since I'll probably never see them again. But one guy was from Greensboro, North Carolina. The other guy was from the U.S. Virgin Islands. And this is what they said.
You got treadmills for them things. They run them.
Oh, yeah.
Them
guys. These two treadmills?
These guys, yeah, they take them very sequel.
Yeah, I know.
We feed them.
I know
so
about
them,
man. We used to do it.
Yeah, you do. They take it serious. Big money.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So how do people make money with it? Just like the gambling on it?
Yeah, they gamble.
Right.
And they gamble on it, but when you first start out, now you have 8 weeks that you put the roosters up. And you don't feed them nothing but grain,
uh-huh.
Yes. Nothing else for 8 weeks.
Yeah,
all right. Then you spar them out. It's a house. What it is, you got little boxing gloves about this big around, and you put them on the spurs on the back of the legs, uh-huh. And they sit there and fight and box out to get ready for a regular fight.
Uh-huh.
All right. Now when it comes to the regular fight, now you got steel gabs going that looks like a half moon.
Uh-huh.
Stainless steel gab, it's about this long, and
it's like six inches long.
Yeah, uh-huh. And that's what they fight with, and they fight till whichever one can make it.
Yeah.
I mean, because every time they hit, them steel gabs stab into them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they fight till they can't fight no more.
how do they know to fight?
You put different roosters in, different people come in with different roosters.
Right,
you have a weight limit.
Uh-huh.
You know, you have a different weight limit for different roosters. So if you got a rooster that weighs 4 pounds,
uh-huh.
Right, you're going to go against another 4 pound rooster,
right,
that somebody else has.
Like boxing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you, like, how do roosters know they're supposed to fight each other?
It's an instinct.
It's a male instinct.
It's just an instinct.
Like pit bull, you put two dogs in there, strange dogs,
uh-huh.
They're going to
yeah,
fight.
It's, yeah, that's uh-huh. what they, it's uh-huh. same as putting two pit
right.
bulls together.
Right.
Uh-huh. What do y'all think about people who say it's inhumane? What do you think about the accusation that it's animal cruelty?
Well, I mean, like I say, I've done it all my life. I mean, to a point, I guess,
in
the way you look at it, it is. But if you look at it another way, it's one of the biggest sports in Greensboro or anywhere right now.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, you go into a fight, you walk into a fight, you go put 5 roosters up into the fight. All right, it's going to cost you $600 as soon as you walk in the door. That's just the end of the roosters in the fight.
Uh-huh.
All right, you got 200 people putting up $600. Right, you playing for all that money at the end. If you're the last fighter to live, your rooster to make it and live through it, that all that money is what you collected. So you might collect anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000, $16,000, $20,000 in one night.
Side bets too. You don't steal the side bets.
Yeah. You know, how old are the roosters usually?
Anywhere from, well, ours run from like maybe 4 years old up to something like maybe six, seven.
Four to 6 or 7 years old.
Yeah.
So they're not like, they're not that
prime.
They're not young.
Yeah, yeah, they're not prime. They're in prime, mature. Right.
Okay. How long does it take to train them?
You can train a rooster in about 8 weeks. Four fight. Uh-huh. Because like say, once you put them up to start for the fights and stuff, you put them up in a cage. They stay in that cage for 8 weeks, and all they do is just eat grain. That's it. What they call is fighting mesh, which is like, it's like grounded up corn, but it's grain.
So before that 8 weeks, are they like, what are they eating? How is that eight weeks different from before that?
Because like when you got them out on the yard, you feed them, they can eat anything. I mean, they can eat worms off the ground. They can eat corn on the ground. They can eat bread you throw out. Whatever food's thrown out on the ground, that's what they can eat.
So how does it affect them to be in the cages just eating the grain?
Somehow or another, it does a metabolism in their body. And then after they're in that cage so long, well, it's like you've been in a cage for long time. You get, you get big, but then you get crazy in that cage because you can't get out.
Right.
You know. Right. And then once you get them out and stuff, and like say you spar them at home with them boxing gloves, all you got to do is sit this rooster down and this rooster down. They automatically going to fight each other.
Yeah.
It's an automatic thing.
Yeah.
It ain't like you got to train them to fight. They automatically going to fight.
Yeah.
You know? It box it
but
takes.
Now you do have roosters that you can take to a fight, and call, they will run.
Call, yeah.
They will run from it. And if you have a rooster and you take him to a fight, if the rooster runs from another rooster every time, you might as well just wring his neck because he is no good for nothing. I mean, he's not even good for a yard rooster.
Right, you want him breeding nothing. You want a dog.
He's no good for nothing.
You want him breed.
If he runs, will the other rooster chase him down and kill him?
Not normally. Sometimes they will. Sometimes they'll chase him down. But most of the time, if your rooster runs, they'll just go ahead and pull him apart.
Fight over.
You know, they'll just pull him apart because this guy over here, he's already won because his rooster doesn't run.
He's scratch, right? He's scratching the collar.
But like I say, I mean, you go in there with five roosters. Each person goes in there with five or six roosters. They enter. You got 200 people entering five or six roosters at a time.
Uh-huh.
You know, like we had one. It was a Speeder Gray. Like we bought it out of a magazine called Grit and Steel. Comes out of, I think it's out of New York.
Uh-huh.
Like that rooster was $800.
Uh-huh.
That rooster fought five fights in one night. He had a broke leg, a broke wing, one punched out eye, and the rooster still won all five fights.
What kind of money does that bring in for the owner?
That one right there for the owner of that one, he got $11,000 out of that fight when he was done.
He started to make money. It's good breed, you know, top notch rooster. Like you said, you're buying quality breeder rooster.
I mean,
you know?
You can have a cheap rooster. Right. You know?
What about the legal risks? Like, is it state by state the law, or is it federal or what?
Some places it is. Now, in North Carolina, it's illegal. But you can go into, like, Galax, Virginia, or somewhere like that, and it's legal.
Because of Virginia, it's legal in Virginia?
Yeah, it's legal in Virginia. In certain places in Virginia, but not all of them.
Was it Florida? Was it in Florida? I know he's big in Florida.
Yeah.
I got a lot of rooster. Roy Jones, the boxer. Mm. He had a whole. He's big in that.
Yeah, I think it's legal there.
Right.
But I know in North Carolina.
Spanish
not.
Culture, like Spanish culture, they love that sort of stuff.
But believe me, I know because I was in the Greensboro newspaper in North Carolina.
So what happened to you?
Well, nothing because I was underage, so they couldn't do anything. I was just there at the fight because I was there with my uncle. But since everybody got busted and raided at that fight at the same time, everybody had to go to uptown.
Uh-huh.
They couldn't put me in jail because I was underage.
Uh-huh.
But I was still on the front page of the Greensboro newspaper.
Did your uncle go to jail?
Yeah, he did, but he got out.
Was there a big fine, or was the consequences?
I don't think he really did. I think they just took all the roosters that was there, and they took all the money that was in the fight, and they took all the money that was in the concession stand there.
Uh-huh.
So they ended up with probably about on average, they probably end up about $26,000 that one night.
What'd they do with the roosters?
I don't know. Because they cooked them and kept them. So I don't know.
Because they raided, in Massachusetts, it's illegal. And in my hometown, in Florence, they raided the cockfighting operation and took 200 roosters. But then they didn't have anywhere, anyway, they didn't have 200 cages to keep them separate, and they couldn't put them all together. And so then they said they euthanized them.
Yeah. That's probably what they did with those, because like I say, I mean, once they take them, you don't get them back. It don't matter.
Like the death.
I mean, it ain't like a lot of dogs. I mean, a dog getting a fight, you can eventually go up there and get him back. Uh-huh. But rooster, you don't get back. It's an interesting thing, but like I say, I mean, if you look at it in the long run, I mean, it is what they consider cruelty to animals, just like a dog fight. Uh-huh. But it's all about the money, so everybody does it anyway. Like a dog fight, it's all about the money. Even though it's illegal in a lot of places, it's still gonna happen.
You find a way to do it. Yeah,
yeah, it's still gonna happen.
Yeah, I mean, it seems tricky too. Like, there's so many cultural differences around it, and so, you know, for one, the law from for one culture or whatever to say.
It'd be big in Asia too. Yeah. I see a movie where like Asia, like Indonesia, some of it, and they had like do a big and rooster fighting too.
Yeah. You said it's still big in the U.S. Virgin Islands, too, right?
Oh, yeah, it's illegal. They have it's legal. You have a big arena, and it's, like, totally legal. Yeah.
That's the way it is.
Puerto Rico, too, is totally legal.
Yeah. That's the way it is up front in Virginia. They have a big arena where they just go into.
Right.
I mean, it's just interesting for me to think about the parallels. Like, there's some parallels that come to mind immediately. You're thinking about, of course, like jail and people going crazy because they're locked up. Yeah. And then also, like, in terms of animal cruelty, the whole, like, industrial meat.
But these guys, a lot of times these guys, these birds get treated so good, they see this business. You know, they treat these birds like God. Sometimes, you know, they get the best of everything. You know,
oh yeah,
you get the best food, you get the best training, you get the best everything. It's serious business. You know,
Our roosters had air conditioning in the summertime. They had heat in the wintertime. They had lights year round.
Right.
I mean, all our barns had lights year-round. Sometimes it had air conditioners in there. Wintertime, it had heaters in there. So, I mean, it was just, they was treated just like somebody at home.
Gladiator, you know? That's what it is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You go out there and pay $600-$800 for a rooster. You don't want that joker dying the next day.
Right. Ain't no cheap bird.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. Anything else you wanted to say?
I didn't think of it right now.
Yeah, it's a culture thing.
What happens if a rooster gets gouged in the throat?
They usually take and put your mouth over him and sit there and draw the blood out of his throat to keep him from choking to death. You just draw it out and then spit it back out to keep him from choking to death. Especially if he catches a gab and it goes into his throat right here, because it's going to bleed. Instead of bleeding on the outside, it's going to bleed on the inside, and it's going to draw up into his throat, make a knot. So you got to sit there and draw that blood out.
All right. That was an interview, a conversation with a couple of guys that I was on the Greyhound bus with during the bus breakdown in Bristol, Tennessee. One thing that I said during the interview that I've since found out wasn't quite right, where I said that the roosters that were taken off of Florence Road, that they were all euthanized. Well, according to the paper, there were like 400 roosters total, and 200 or so of them were euthanized. But then they found homes and a shelter for another 180 or 190 or something like that. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. I was gonna play a song. I got a song to play, but apparently that's the wrong link. So let me just play this, and then I'll play the song.
Tune in to Sing About It, Sundays, 4 to 6 p.m. on Valley Free Radio. Topical folk songs giving musical commentary on peace and social justice issues and events. Music comes from the New Song Library, www.newsonglibrary.org. That's Sing About It, Sundays, 4 to 6 p.m. on Valley Free Radio. Sabonero.
tanaw. Hinihintay sa pagtilaok at pagsigaw. Oras na para manok mo ay himasin, bago ka pa man maganda ng sinain. Pag-uusapan kung ano ang plano tungkol sa laban niya sa manok ni Congressman. Kailangan panabong mo'y ikondisyon para sa tupada, hindi ka madehado. Inom ng vitamina, bigay ng patuba, itim ng sigarilyo, ibuga sa iyong alaga. Papaliguan ni Himasimase, nagtatampo si Mrs. Di na siya napapansin. O anong sarap kung ituring ang panabong na siya magbibigay ng kikitain sa maghapon. Kahit may opisina, magsasabong sa gabi, pag nanalo may tinola at madaming salapi.
That's a little song about cockfighting in the Philippines. This is Joe Ely with Gallo del Cielo.
Zaragoza left his home in Casas Grandes when the moon was full. He had no money in his pocket, just a locket of his sister framed in gold. He headed for El Sueco, stole a rooster named Gallo del Cielo. And he crossed the Rio Grande with that rooster nestled deep beneath his arm. Gallo del Cielo was a warrior born in heaven, so the legends say. His wings, they had been broken. He had one eye rolling crazy in his head. He'd fought 100 fights, and the legends say that one night near El Sueco, they fought Cielo 7 times. 7 times he left brave roosters dead. My Terry's, I'm thinking of you now in San Antonio. I have $27 and the good luck of your picture framed in gold. Tonight I'll put it all on the fighting spurs of Gallo del Cielo. And I'll return to buy the land Pancho Villa stole from father long ago. Side of San Diego, in the onion fields of Paco Monteverde. The pride of San Diego lay sleeping on a fancy bed of silk. And they laughed when Zaragoza pulled the one-eyed del Cielo from beneath his coat. But they cried when Zaragoza walked away with $1,000 bill. Oh, the Materis, I'm thinking of you now in Santa Barbara. I have $1,500 and the good luck of your picture framed in gold. Tonight I'll put it all on the fighting spurs of Gallo del Cielo. I'll return to buy the land I truly stole from father long ago. Now the moon has gone to hiding, and the lantern light spills shadows on the fighting scene. A wicked black named Zorro faces Del Cielo in the night. Carlos Zaragoza hears the tiny crack that runs across his rooster's beak. And he fears that he has lost the $50,000 riding on the fight. I'm thinking of you now in Santa Clara. The money's on the table,
I'm holding out your good luck framed in gold. Everything we dream of is riding on the spurs to El Cielo. I'll return to buy the land he has stole from father long ago. The signal it was given, and the roosters rose together far above the sand. Cayo del Cielo, sunk a gap in the Zorro's shiny breath. They were separated quickly, for they rose and fought each other time and time again. And the legends all agree, Cayo del Cielo fought the best. And the screams of Saragossa fill the night outside the town of Santa Clara. As the peak of Del Cielo lay broken like a shell within his hand. And they say that Saragossa screamed a curse upon the bones of Pancho Villa. As Zorro rose up one more time and drove Del Cielo in the sand. Oh, my Teresa, I'm thinking of you now, San Francisco. No money in my pocket, I no longer have your locket framed in gold. I prayed last evening with the bones of my beloved Del Cielo. I will not return to buy the land that me has stole long ago. Do the rivers still run muddy outside of my beloved Casas Grandes? And does the scar upon my brother's face turn red when he hears mention of my name? And do the people of El Sueco still curse the theft of Cayo del Cielo? Tell my family not to worry, I will not return to cause them shame.
Listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, somewhat continuing on that theme of the U.S.-Mexico border. Well, actually, I think that song was from when California was and Texas was part of Mexico before they were taken by the United States. But so I have a writing that I wrote on the bus trip back north from Kentucky. This is from like a week and a half ago. Yeah, so this is a bus north from Tennessee headed towards Richmond, Virginia, and then D.C. and north other northbound points, northeast points. Yeah, okay. I scribbled this down on the bus, and I have not even glanced at it since then, so I hope I can read it. All right. It's Monday morning, July 2nd, 2018. I'm on the Greyhound bus heading north out of Richmond to Washington, D.C. My seatmate appears to be about 18 or 19, wearing tight bleached jeans and a baseball cap over his short black hair. How are you? I ask as I sit down next to him. Fine, thank you. He's busy texting, and then he says something in Spanish to the young woman and baby across the aisle. I end up translating some for them when the bus breaks down, about 20 minutes north of Richmond, and then we get going again. Back on the road, I doze off in the morning sun. There are lots of passengers who, on this bus, who, like me, have already spent at least a night on the bus. maybe more. And some just came from another bus where we spent 10 hours on the overnight bus whose toilet hadn't gotten emptied when it was supposed to, and it sloshed around back there gassing us. But I noticed when these things happen, bus breakdowns, late drivers, busted air conditioning, or overflowing toilets, pulling over to close open luggage compartments, or getting hit by a car in Manhattan. When these things happen and the sighs and grumbling, threats and blame throwing rise up, almost never do I hear or see travelers from the Americas south of the U.S. border complain. Back on the northbound bus, I doze off in the morning sun and am awakened by the loud conversation in Spanish between the young man next to me and the man in the seat in front of me. I don't catch everything, just snippets. And this is all, like, you know, translated. How did they catch you? I was picked up for drunk driving. No, man, you can't do that. Where are you from? Guatemala. And me too. Well, they caught me crossing the river. Are you going to go back to visit? Not soon. I need to make some money. There's work here for people who are willing. Yeah, true. I escaped the war. How much did it cost you to come here? $12,500. Me too, that's the going rate, $12,000 or so. Did you come alone? No, my wife and baby here, we all came together. I am so tired. I spent 3 months in 5 different detention centers. It's a such and such place in Texas. Oh yeah, you were there? Did you see El Chaparrito? Is he still there? I didn't notice. So this is just like snippets of the conversation in Spanish these guys were having. And I was surprised they were talking so loudly and openly. It seems rare on the Greyhound that other people like who aren't native Spanish speakers speak Spanish, like if there's a need for a translator. Well, it seems rare to find bilingual people on the Greyhound bus has been my experience, because I often feel like I often end up doing some translating when people are having trouble switching buses or whatever. I wanted to interview them for my radio show, but there was no relationship of trust or friendship, so it just feels like it would have been exploitative and not worth, you know, not a risk worth asking them to take. There had been another guy on the previous bus who he had told me that he had just come from Guatemala as well, mojado, which, like, literally it means wet, but it means he crossed the border, the U.S.-Mexico border, illegally. And I had been sleeping across the aisle from him all night, thinking he was a teenager, this other guy. But when we got to talking at the Richmond bus terminal, I decided he was probably more like 30. He only carried one little black shopping bag. There were other families on that bus, too. Young women with 1 or 2 or 3 children. Quiet, dark-haired, short, not speaking English. I wonder how many made it across the border or out of detention centers today. Welcome to America, the land of cars and air conditioning. That's the real problem with immigration as I see it. People come here and start consuming the same amount of resources that European Americans consume. And that's when there's not enough to go around. All right, that's the end of that little scribbling. Feel free, if you have any comments, to call me at the studio, 585-1033. Here, this is Valley Free Radio, WXOJ 103.3 FM in Northampton.
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Vengan al Bike Lab de Northampton, el taller de bicicleta. Aprende a arreglar tu bicicleta y a divertirte.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is. As I was biking around today trying to think about what songs to play for today's show, the Talking Heads came into my mind about the thinking about the bus and the travelers.
Says he's sorry for the blisters on our feet. Come riding in a bus, the high and the low. Mommy, daddy, you and I, we're going on a trip and we're not going home. Mommy, daddy, you and I
driving, keep driving.
Listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. You can hear archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Next on Out There, I have an interview with my parents, Jim and Marianne Woodring, who live in eastern Kentucky, about air conditioning. This interview is from a week and a half ago when I was down there.
Can I ask you about air conditioning? I don't need it now. But when I was going through the change, Jim put up one in that far room.
Uh-huh.
And I needed it then.
Uh-huh. What do you do when you feel hot?
Well, I don't have any trouble. I'm so much older now that I don't have any problems.
Uh-huh.
No, but he did put an air conditioner in that back bedroom 20, I don't know,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, whenever it was, maybe 30.
Oh, I just want to mention that my mother is 86, turns 87 next month. My dad's 82, turns 83 next month.
And all these people that tell you it's all psychological, there are men that there's never.
The thermometer says it's 87 degrees in here now. Does it feel hot to you? Are you comfortable?
I'm comfortable.
Yeah, I'm
always
comfortable.
I'm almost always comfortable.
Yeah.
Except when I get too cold.
Yeah.
Well, it's been awful wonderful having you here.
Okay. Good to be here. So, can I ask you about air conditioning?
You can ask me about air conditioning. Okay. Ask me about air conditioning.
Let's see.
That's what I want to look at.
Thermometer says it's 86 degrees. Are you comfortable?
It's 86 degrees in this house. And I'm standing over a hot stove trying to boil milk to make cheese. And is it am I different whether it's comfortable or not? I got a fan going behind me. So I'm getting some cooling or whatever, but the alternative is artificial air, cool and dry or something, and that's not what humans are made for. Convenience is killing us. And even though most people consider this house without air conditioning a substandard, the technician are called HVAC, right? Heating and air.
HVAC,
yeah. I mean, they don't have other kinds of technicians anymore. Uh-huh. It's all it's all heating air. Because everything are heat pumps or something or other, and it don't make a difference. It'll cool off by morning. You can open the windows and hear the fireworks.
Yeah.
That's what's going now, or hear the frogs croaking, or whatever going out there, whippoorwills. Yeah. Sometimes we used to have a hoot owl for a while,
uh-huh.
or something you can hear way off in the distance. You got screens on your window and a fan going. You don't need much else.
Yeah. Have you ever lived with air conditioning?
In the house, no. Maybe this is I hate to say back in the old days, when I was in seminary, that would be 55, 58, 59, 60, somewhere in there. Two of the summers I worked as a nurse's aide in a local hospital for a summer job.
Uh-huh.
And that was a hospital. There wasn't no air conditioning.
Uh-huh.
We had screens and fans.
Yeah.
A hospital, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what they did in surgery. I don't know how they did that.
Yeah. How do you think the trend towards everything being air conditioning is affecting human beings?
It's polluting the world. It was once a luxury that was, and in some health issues. But just to have it. In the long run, human beings are made for stress. That was how it worked.
Yeah.
Just that's how you survived, because it was either feast or famine or heat or cold or who knows what you're going to get. And you just lose lots of, I'm going to say survival instincts or survival abilities if you never get stressed. You know, kids are born in an air-conditioned hospital, an air-conditioned home, in an air-conditioned car, and it's too hot to go out and play, or, you know, the folks don't want them to. And then they got all the asthma or whatever, you know, all kinds of, you know, plus just the energy uses. A whole another problem, because that's how convenience is. Over time, there's a price for convenience.
That was my dad, Jim Woodring, from Bell County, Kentucky. And before that, my mom, Marianne Woodring. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. And it's 4:47, according to the clock on the wall. Democracy Now! Is coming up at 5 o'clock. Thanks for listening today. On the subject of air conditioning, I heard this piece on NPR earlier in the week about heat stroke, and they talked about this boy in Phoenix who had, I think he and his dad were hiking. He was, I forget, maybe 10 or 12 years old, and they had been hiking, and he got heat stroke, and he collapsed in the parking lot and got like second degree burns, I think they said, on his skin where he hit the pavement. In this whole piece on the radio, they didn't mention anything about, well, they talked about how even at night, like in the cities at night, it's not even cooling down. That's the thing, where my parents are, it cools down because they're surrounded by trees and woods, and it's a natural area. There's no pavement for at least a quarter of a mile. But in the cities, it's just so much heat sink pavement and all. And in this NPR piece, they didn't mention anything about the amount of cities that are paved over, or the role of trees. And I was thinking how I'm super grateful to the Tree Northampton people and the DPW, the city, for all the trees that have been planted, all the shade trees on the streets of Northampton in the last couple years. It's just really exciting to see them go up, and I hope they get good stewards taking care of them, and that a lot of them can survive. And I suppose as long as I have the public's attention, I'll make a short public appeal to, if you're able to turn your air conditioner so it's not quite so cold, maybe use a fan in conjunction with the air conditioner. I'd appreciate it, because all those air conditioners are pumping heat into the outside, and it's making those of us on the outside hotter and hotter. Thank you. So one of the things my dad mentioned was the outside night sounds in the country. I had a clip of the night sounds. It's on my recorder, but I didn't get it transferred to my thumb drive. It's lost in the files somewhere. So instead, I'm going to play another song that popped into my head today, The Foolish Frog. This is Pete Seeger. Again, you're listening to Out There. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock.
Once upon a time, there was a farmer walking down the road. He was whistling this tune, but he scratched his head and says, "Doggone, I wish I had some words to the song. All I got is the melody." Just then he came to a little brook, and he leaned on the railing of the bridge. Down there was a big old bullfrog hopping from bank to bank. The bullfrog looked up, saw the farmer, and thought he'd show off. He took an extra special big hop. Kersplash, he fell in the mud, got all dirty, and the farmer laughed and started singing. Way down south in the Yankety Yank, a bullfrog jumped from bank to bank just because he'd nothing better for to do. He stubbed his toe, fell in the water, you could hear him holler for a mile and a quarter just because he'd nothing better for to do. The farmer went down the road feeling very proud of himself and making up a song. Went to the corner store, bought some groceries, and said, "Oh, before I go home, I must teach you my new song." The man in the store says, "Go home, I'm busy here. See all these summer people? I won't pay you my money unless you let me sing my song." "Oh, all right, sing it and get it over with." Well, the farmer started singing. The man in the store said, "Hey, that's a good tune. Gather around, everybody. We'll have a party." And they were stamping on the floor, drinking the free soda pop, passing around the free soda crackers. Back home, wives and children sitting down to eat supper, and where's father? The mother says, "Children, you better run down to the corner store. Fetch your old man. He's probably wasting his time as usual." All the children ran down the row. They ran inside the store. They heard the music. They forgot all about giving the message. The children started singing. "Way down south in the Yankee Yank, a bullfrog jumped from bank to bank just because there's nothing better for to do." Well, the children were stamping on the floor and drinking the free strawberry pop, eating the free soda crackers. In every farmhouse, it was the same situation. The mother says, "This has gone far enough. Do they expect us to work all day and nobody show up for supper?" And they walk down the road waving the frying pans. They got near, though. They hear that pretty music. They forget about being angry. They drop the frying pans in the gutter. They walk in the store and the mother starts. "Way down south in the Yankee Yank, bullfrog jump from bank to bank just..." And the mothers were drinking the free strawberry pop, eating the free soda crackers and stamping on the floor. Meanwhile, back in the barn, all the cows says, "Where is everybody? We're supposed to be milked. It's getting very uncomfortable." The cows walked out of the stalls. They walked right out of the barn, down the road inside the corner store, and they start moo, 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 moo. The cows were stamping on the floor, drinking the free strawberry pop, eating the free soda crackers. Out in the barnyard, all the chickens says, "Where is everybody? We're supposed to be fed. We're getting hungry." The chickens hopped over the fence. They hopped down the road, hop inside the corner store. Feathers flying through the air, and the chickens were stamping on the floor, drinking the free strawberry pop, eating the free soda crackers. Meanwhile, all the barns started talking. They said, "We feel so empty. Without any cows, without any chickens, I guess we'll have to go find them." The barns picked himself up off the foundation. They galumphed down the road. Squeeze inside the corner store, believe it or not. Did you ever hear a rusty hinge on a barn door? That's the way they sung. Out in the fields, all the grass says, "Where is everybody? The cows are supposed to come and eat us. I guess we'll have to go find them." The grass picked itself up, swished down the road, swished inside the corner store. When the grass was gone, the fields were gone. When the fields were gone, the banks of the brook were gone. The brook says, "I don't have nothing to bubble between." So the brook bubbled down the road, bubbled up inside the corner store. Bubbling up and down the stairway, the grass was growing out the chimney, the feathers flying through the air, and the cow's tail swishing out the window. Everybody drinking the free strawberry pop, eating the free soda crackers. There was the bullfrog in midair. He looks down, there's nothing underneath him. He looks over, there's nothing to land on. He says, "Where am I?" The only thing left was the road. He started hopping down the road. "Hey, what's that racket down at the corner store?" "Why, they're singing. They're singing about me." And he was so proud, he puffed himself up with pride. And he puffed, 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 and he exploded. Directions, cows, barns, farmers, chickens, wives, children, the whole corner store went up in the air. And everybody floated down through the sky, landed right where they were supposed to have been the whole time. Sat down eating supper, feeling kind of foolish for themselves. Next day they went out to try and find the frog. The They look high, they look low. Strawberry pop bottles and soda crackers in all directions, but no frog. So all there is left of the frog is the song. We might as well sing her once again. Away down south in the Yankety Yank, a bullfrog jumped from bank to bank just because he'd nothing better for to do. Stubbed his toe, fell in the water, stubbed his toe, fell in the water. You could hear him holler for a mile and a quarter just because he'd nothing better for to do. There's lots of people just like that foolish frog of mine, get themselves in trouble just to pass the time. There's lots of people just like that foolish frog of mine, just because they've nothing better for to do. You know how to whistle?
Was pretty exciting. And before Democracy Now! Comes up at 5 o'clock, I want to make a few announcements. Coming up Friday, July 13th, it's Arts Night Out. Lots of events in downtown Northampton, including In Plain Air Painting Festival in Pulaski Park from 4 to 8 p.m. Also happening on Saturday, July 14th in Springfield, Por la Cultura de Puerto Rico Vivo Yo. I live through my culture. The traditional dances, songs, and drums of Puerto Rico are alive and well in the Pioneer Valley. I Live Through My Culture is going to be Saturday, July 14th at City Stage in Springfield, and it brings together musicians and dancers from throughout the area, some long-term residents and some arrived since last year's hurricane. Featured are Bomba de Aquí with Brenda Liz Cepeda, Las Mujeres de Bomba, Los Gigantes de la Plena, and others. It'll be 7:30 Saturday evening at City Stage Springfield. That's 150 Bridge Street. Also, something else happening in July. And, from July through mid-October at Northfield, north on the Connecticut River. Northfield Mountain Recreation and Environmental Center, I think, is sponsoring scenic river cruises on the Connecticut River. They'll be Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, July through mid-October. The cruises are 11 a.m., 1 15 p.m., 3 p.m. during the day on those days. And they cost $15 for adults, $8 for children 14 and under. And I think they're like interpretive, like nature sort of cruises. So check it out.